Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the scheme update for workers' compensation in Queensland. My name is Peter Mulquinney. I'm a principal at Taylor Fry and I'll be your chair for this session. So today we are fortunate to have Janine Hillhouse from the Office of Industrial Relation and Garnet Hollier from WorkCover Queensland. So Janine is the Executive Director of the Workers' Compensation Regulatory Services for the Office of Industrial Relations, and so she'll be bringing a regulatory perspective to today's update. Garnet Hollier is the Chief Financial Officer for WorkCover Queensland, and so he'll be giving WorkCover's perspective to today's update. So we are sitting here because it's a panel session today, so there won't be a formal presentation. So I'll begin the session by asking some questions. If you do have questions that come up for the panelists during the session, please use the app and send them through. If it's relevant, I might bring it up during the question time, or we could wait till the end where there's also an opportunity to use the microphone to ask questions. Okay, so we might start. So I might start with you, Janine. So we had I gave you a very brief introduction, so can I ask you to give an introduction about yourself?
Cool. Thanks. I'm Janine, the Executive Director of Workers' Compensation Regulatory Services in Queensland. So what does that actually mean? In Queensland, we've got a centrally funded short-tail, no-fault scheme with access to common law. We also have three major players within the scheme from an oversight perspective. There's the Office of Industrial Relations, which is where I come from. We've got WorkCover Queensland, and we've got 26 self-insured employers. So as the scheme regulator, our responsibility is put simply to ensure that the scheme is meeting all of its objectives and that it is doing that in a way that is sustainable, in a way that's fair, and in a way that also meets the government's objectives as well. So it means that we need to be independent. It also means that we undertake a number of very different roles. So from our perspective, we give advice to government and we implement the government's objectives and legislative agenda. But we also support around 8,500 reviews, appeals, and medical assessment tribunal referrals from the scheme in a year. So we play a really key role in making sure that the decision-making by insurers and by medical practitioners within the scheme is fair, and it aligns with what our legislation's requirements are. We also license the scheme's 26 insurers. We monitor all insurers, including WorkCover. We undertake compliance. We prosecute workers and employers and insurers, and we help people navigate the scheme. We run a range of different independent support services that through grants that really provide independence in terms of service support. We also undertake some engagement and some education activities.
Thank you, Janine. I might hand over to Garnet to give an introduction to.
Morning, everyone, and looking forward to the session. My name's Garnet. As Peter said, I'm the CFO at WorkCover. I've only been in workers' compensation since February, so no curly questions. We'll send those to Peter. But I joined from superannuation and broader financial services, where I did a lot of transformation and mergers and acquisitions to sort of drive efficiency and scale in that sector. So when I was looking for a new challenge, I thought, where else but Queensland? And what better challenge than workers' compensation? So I'm here at WorkCover and enjoying it so far. WorkCover has been doing workers' compensation in Queensland for over 20 years. We're about 93% of the scheme. So a significant portion of the scheme, government-owned but self-funded. Our premiums will be about $3 billion this year, and we're targeting a premium rate of $1.34, so relatively low there. So had 94,000 claims come through our doors last year, and so really looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you, Garnet. So I might pass back to you again, Janine. So just interested in your perspectives on, I guess, the performance of workers' comp from a regulator's perspective, how things going?
Thank you. I think from a broader perspective, what I can say, if you've been sitting in any other scheme sessions, is like many other schemes across Australia, there's probably going to be no surprises in Queensland. But we are in a really solid place to be able to tackle the trends that are occurring within the scheme. And I know Garnet will be able to dive into a little bit more detail in relation to the financial performance of the scheme. But like many schemes, what we're seeing is we've seen a growth in, across the last 5 years, we've seen a growth in the number of claims coming into the scheme by around 12%. The positive sitting within that is it looks like our claims frequency rate is relatively stable. It hasn't jumped too much within that. It's sort of sitting around that 34 claims per 1,000 employees. We've also seen the number of accepted psychological injury claims double across that same five-year period. For us, that means they're about 4.8% across the whole of scheme. Work cover and self-insurers are about 4.8% of all claims that we see now. And the drivers for that are really coming through from healthcare, public administration and education and training. So no surprises probably sitting there in terms of the sectors that we're seeing those claim numbers come through. We've also seen an increase in the number of secondary mental injury claims by around 65% across that same period. The numbers of those claims still sit below the number of accepted primary psych, but they're not far off. Workers are staying on benefits longer, not a surprise probably with the number of mental injury claims coming up in the scheme. For us, that is sitting around 70 days is our average time on claim, and there'd be business days in the Queensland scheme. We've also seen our rehab and return to work rate start to drop across the last 5 years, and it's currently sitting at around 90.8%. It is obviously a scheme trend that we're paying a lot of attention to from our perspective as a regulator, because with each of those scheme trends, what we find when you bring them together is not only do you impact on the costs to the scheme, but from our perspective, as a scheme that has access to common law, what you actually see is you start to see more common law claims start to flow through there, because all of the key determining factors, being on claim for longer, secondary mental injuries, are all sort of sitting there within the bucket of the claims coming through.
Thanks, Janine. I might just pass straight back to you, Garnet, to, I guess, add to that any different views or additional views you'd like to add.
Thanks, Peter. Look, I think, have similar views on a range of those matters, but I think if I take a step back and think about macro and Queensland, there's a lot of tailwinds behind the Queensland economy. Yes, we've got the Olympics in 2032, but it turns out people want to come here sooner than that. And we've got net migration, only other state than WA. So net migration. And so we've got a scheme that's growing in size at a fair clip. So that's a challenge. And I guess, we talked about the claims volumes and dealing with those in our in-house claims model. So for us as an insurer, we're a little bit unique there as well in terms of the jurisdictions. We do everything in-house. And, we need to meet that growth through a labour market that is largely at full employment. So that's equally a challenge for us to manage our business in Queensland. But I think pleasingly for the last financial year, I think we've largely achieved that. We've stayed within our regulatory guardrails, fortunately, and we've also managed to continue to deliver, with dignity and the sort of values that we have in our claims management business. So I'm really proud that we've had good financial performance. We're in a strong financial position. Our funding ratio target's 120%, and we're actually pushing up to the top end of our capital adequacy range there. So that's pleasing. But equally, we've also managed to maintain, by and large, our return to work rates. There's been minor slippage, but it's still within the sort of the boundaries of our targets. So that's been a good outcome in my view. We've got a lot of changes afoot, but already in the first quarter for 26, starting to see some green shoots. That's how I'm describing it to the board and anyone who wants to listen in some improvements in metrics. So that's giving us confidence that we're focusing in the right areas.
Thanks, Garnet. Interesting to hear that the I guess both your views on how the scheme's going. I think jump on challenges first. So two challenges that came through. One is around, I guess, scheme growth. There's just a big, large growth in the Queensland economy and the number of employees being covered by the WorkCover scheme, and increase in psychological injury, which is prevalent across all schemes in Australia. Any from your own perspectives and thinking about recent challenges, any other comments around the recent challenges faced by workers' compensation in Queensland?
From a regulator perspective, is regulators, I suppose, at their heart are really about influencing behaviour. That is why we exist. Some may think it's to wave a stick, to make life difficult for business, to add complexity into already complex environments, but that's not really why we're here. It's to influence behaviour change for a particular purpose. And I think for me, when we're looking at all of the different challenges all of the different trends that are occurring within our scheme at the moment, as a regulator, the biggest challenge for us is being able to influence those trends. So from our perspective, we're risk-based, which means we focus our attention on where the risk is highest, or, to use another term of phrase, where there is likely to be more harm. And that's where we focus our attention. But what we're finding with some of the trends that are occurring across the board is there's a complexity to that. They're multifaceted. There isn't just one thing that we can say needs to be done across the scheme to really start to tackle and to turn some of those trends around. So as a regulator, I think the challenge for us is how do we actually step forward and influence the different players in the scheme to actually make a difference, because everybody in this room would know what best practice looks like and sounds like. You've probably heard it at this conference, you've heard it at half a dozen conferences potentially across the last few years. But the tackling is how do we actually use what we know as best practice, and how as a scheme do we step towards that? So for us as a regulator, it's how many different tools can we use and how many people are we able to actually influence? And I think for us, one of the biggest challenges that we recognised in the last 12 months along that sort of side of things has been in relation to rehabilitation and return to work, in particular rehabilitation and return to work planning. We adopted that best practice regulator approach of education, developing guidelines around planning with all of the different scheme stakeholders, which took at least 12 months to do. We then provided time for those guidelines, which were based on 20 years of legislation. We took time for those guidelines to settle. We then, across the last 12 months, undertook an audit of every insurer. And what we found was, against legislative requirements that had been in place for 20 years, only 24 out of 29 insurers did not satisfactorily meet minimum requirements for rehabilitation and return to work planning. That told us a story, not necessarily about just insurers and rehabilitation return to work planning, but it told us a story about us and around how we have to, I suppose, as a regulator, step back and look at how could we have done our role in a different way that would have supported the outcomes, not only for insurers going into that process, but also for each of the participants sort of within our scheme.
I might pick up on a comment there just on behaviour and share how we're thinking about that at WorkCover and how we're supporting our people to drive different behaviours to get a better outcome, particularly in mental injury. I guess, you know, behind this room doesn't need me to educate you on the impacts on the claims book of mental injuries and the complexity there. But behind every claim is a person. And, you know, it often requires more time, more care and more tailoring of the approach. And as I mentioned earlier, we have an internal claims management team. So our mind's gone to, well, how do we support our people through this process? And if we start with determinations, you know, we're 50% of claims get accepted mental injury, and that's been relatively steady the last few years. But the other 50% still, by and large, may have underlying mental health injuries that they need to deal with personally and in the workplace. So that's how we deal with people who we accept or decline, and then on the way through is really, really important. And so one of the things that that we've been looking at is how we support our people. And we've actually, something I'm proud of is we've introduced on-the-floor psychologist recently for our people, to support them, to normalise what's going on around them, the interactions they're having, someone to talk to for support, and to, you know, our view is if we can help our people, you know, manage through this complexity and call out that it is hard, then we can help canvas and galvanise that behavioural change at scale that we need to tackle this this challenge.
Thanks, Garnet. So you kind of, I guess, led into some of the achievements you're proud of. You'd like to add anything, Janine?
Yep.
Probably following a little bit on from that, how to influence, one of our tools is legislation. it is probably the most recognised tool of a regulator, and for us in August of 2024, we had some amendments made to our legislation, and those amendments were really designed to start to hit some of those key trends. For us in Queensland, what that meant is that for the first time we actually have an obligation on insurers, so a positive obligation for them to take reasonable steps to minimise secondary mental injury. It's an interesting one to regulate, but it is a powerful position for us to show the importance of doing that within the scheme. And connected to that, I think there are a number of other amendments that were made. So there was some in relation to improving worker and employer agency, which is something that was spoken about a little bit earlier. And it for us, it looked quite simple. It is a statement of rights and responsibilities at the time they need it, which is at the time a claim is being made, is now a requirement in the scheme. Put in simple, plain language, what do I need to know? What do I need to do? What's happening to me next? We also recognised that there were potentially workers who may have been not being paid their compensation as early as what they needed to do. So we introduced the concept of a base payment, a minimum payment that would be made if we didn't have somebody's income records, so that workers weren't at a disadvantage because their employer hadn't provided or confirmed all of their details. So trying to minimise some of that harm that could be occurring within our scheme. We also strengthened the rehabilitation return to work process. Not surprisingly, with some of those audit results, there's now a timeframe on having a rehabilitation return to work plan in Queensland. And we also provided agency to workers again. Like they have a choice. If they're not happy with their rehab provider, they can actually ask their insurer to change. And we followed the line of some other jurisdictions. And so what that means is host employers have to cooperate with the employer in our scheme, so with the labour hire company, to help support rehabilitation and return to work. We've also required and made it an offence if employers don't provide a reason why they can't provide suitable duties. So for us, it's around providing legislatively what incentives that we could do to encourage all players to actively engage and participate within the workers' the rehabilitation and return to work process. Otherwise, from our perspective, we do have a new regulation. We had a sunset review of our regulation that didn't result in much change to our system. The other component piece that we have been doing and will continue to do is really looking at our regulatory toolkit. So one of the things that was introduced as part of that legislative package was compliance notices. So a legislative notice that requires an obligation holder to make good. So, for example, if you had an insurer who it was found wasn't consulting with workers and employers as part of the rehabilitation return to work process, then what we'd be able to do is issue a notice that would require compliance. So it provides us with another sort of tool that we're able to use. The other thing for us, across, I suppose, looking at it from a regulatory perspective, within the Queensland scheme, there's a big focus in relation to fraud at the moment. So an accomplishment for us is, since the start of this financial year, we've had three successful fraud prosecutions, two of which resulted in workers spending time in prison, and the other was in relation to an employer fraud, which we probably don't receive as many referrals of in the Queensland scheme.
Thanks, Janine. Garnet, would you like to add or talk a little bit more about the recent accomplishments for WorkCover?
Sure. I think what Janine outlined was a whole lot of regulation that that has been a challenge for us as a business to ensure that we resource appropriately to ensure compliance. But I guess we're looking at it beyond that. We're looking at it as compliance, but also how do we move the needle to return injured workers back to work earlier, and other elements of our mental injury support program include in-house clinics. So training our people to better equip them to manage those complex claims. So, and from my perspective as CFO, is making sure we're resourcing it appropriately, given all the external factors, the growth in the scheme, the growth in the regulation, to make sure that we not only keep pace with that growth, keep pace with the regulatory change, but also actually make a difference in mental injury, which as everyone knows, is growing at quite a rate. So,
yeah, thanks, Garnet. So, yeah, that kind of leads us back into challenges. And so thinking about long-term challenges for workers' compensation in Queensland, I guess, you know, what other actions are you, or what do you actually, do you want to add any more about what you see those challenges are, and what actions are you putting in place now to address those? And I'll start with Janine.
I think from a broader perspective, as I sort of mentioned earlier, our challenges aren't all that varied. There's population growth, nature of change of work, rising claims costs, the impact of, I suppose, the change in potentially health and wellbeing also of a society. So it's the challenges facing us are broad, they're big, and they're varied. And it means that, I suppose, from our perspective, we need to be open to having our eye focusing forward and being able to probably do what, as a regulator, we're meant to do best, which is monitor, understand, and look for ways to step forward. And one of the things that we're doing at the moment in relation to that is the Office of Industrial Relations, which is where I'm from, is a group of four regulators across the work continuum. So we have, and we've used it in the past, that ability to connect in regulators. And for us at the moment, one of the pieces of work, which also connects WorkCover Queensland in as well, is looking at how we can influence claim numbers as well as outcomes in the public sector. So we've got a program that traditionally is sort of run in the private sector, is run by Workplace Health and Safety Queensland, called IPAM, which is Injury Prevention Management Program. And what it does is it steps into employers and adopts a very much a systems-based approach to understanding the nature of injuries, looking at their systems, and working with them through an educative approach to bring about improvements in outcomes. So it is something that we're in the early stages of at the moment. I think we've got two agencies that are connected into this program in the Queensland public sector, which will be run across the next 6 to 9 months, to sort of sit down and go, how within some of our agencies in the public sector can we apply those same principles to lead to outcomes that can be learnt about from across the whole sector. So I think it's probably an exciting piece of work. And for us, especially when you're starting to look at the influx of claims coming through the system, the ability for workers' compensation schemes, regulators, insurers to be really connected in with work health and safety regulators is really quite important, because we work together along the continuum. I think that our ability to really take action in that space will make a difference to us.
I might just add to that, because as you were speaking, I was thinking proactivity, and particularly with our large public sector customers. And we're equally participating in a range of activities to drive better engagement and, I guess, closer proximity to them. I guess when I look at the outcomes that self-insurers get and the proximity to the employees and the claim process there, obviously, we're not a self-insurer, but we are wanting to sort of learn from some of that and get closer and have a more proactive relationship with those large employers. Those large public sector employers, including the frontline services of police, corrective services and health, that is where we're seeing the volume of our mental injury claims, as we're no different to other jurisdictions. But if we can lean in deep in that space and build those relationships, that data sharing and that productivity, I think we've got an opportunity. Because I guess if I step back from it and I look at the mental injury growth rates overall, as a CFO and someone who's been doing asset and liability for a while as well, perhaps not to the standard of you guys, but with your support in superannuation, the long-term challenges are definitely there. And so I think, we need some tailored approaches. As I said earlier, we've got the challenge of running a very large claims management business as well in-house. So people, process, technology, we're definitely looking at all those things. The culture, driving a more of accountable performance-based culture, but equipping our people with technology. There's lots of solutions out there, and I guess we're looking at making significant investments in that toolkit for our people.
Thanks, Garnet. So we've got probably about 5 more minutes left for the panel before we open to questions. And so some questions are starting to come through, so please send those through. And we'll get on to those shortly. And I've got 2 more questions, which I might combine into a single question for you both. So what are you excited to be working on at the moment? And are there any significant changes we can expect to see in the next 2 to 3 years? And I'll start again with you, Janine.
So at the moment, I'm not sure, aside from us as a regulator, how many of you in the room are excited for risk assessments, but we're very excited about a risk assessment at the moment. We're undertaking a scheme-wide risk assessment. So we're stepping back and I suppose for us really looking at how do we achieve that objective of being a risk-based regulator. Are we really sitting in that position at the moment? So part of that for us is sort of going, okay, do we really understand where all of our risks are in the scheme, and are we appropriately targeting them? So at the moment, we're undertaking that piece of work across the whole scheme. It's been a really quite an interesting process to undertake, to even reflect on the ways that we work as a regulator. So it looks at the scheme as a whole. So we're part of it. Insurers are part of it. Workers, employers, allied health professionals. So we're really, it's not an organisationally based assessment. It's a scheme-wide one. And what we're looking at using that for is to develop a priority plan for us that'll sit across the coming 5 years. So that'll really help us to actually target what we're looking at and to help us be really transparent around the work that we're doing and why we're targeting what we're targeting for all of the scheme. That piece of work also connects in for us in terms of a charter letter commitment from ministerial level. So us actually having that really strong focus sits in it probably from a government perspective is something that's quite important. Important to us also at the moment, as I mentioned earlier, we're doing a lot of work in the fraud space. It's something that the government's very interested in, the workers' compensation scheme. So we're having a look at everything through from prevention, detection, all the way through to that prosecution piece. And how can we, in working with WorkCover and the other insurers as a scheme, do a better job of navigating that space for all types of fraud? Otherwise, for us, not a surprise. Building scheme capability in relation to rehabilitation and return to work is something that we're interested in, not just from an insurer perspective, but really looking at how potentially we can use the breadth of our organisation as well to start to influence employers as well within that, recognising the really key role that they play in that space. And for us, linked back into that evidence-based decision-making, we're really looking at our data. We've got some data specs across the scheme that are quite old, and we don't always receive the information that we need to receive from the scheme to support us in doing the best job that we can do. So we're modernising how we use, collect our data.
Thank you. Peter's giving me a look, so I'll be quick. What am I excited about? I'm a risk ally, so I'm excited about risk-based regulation as well. Now, I'm excited about everything what we're doing here in Queensland because WorkCover is too important to the Queensland community and Queensland business. So, we're at the sort of confluence of a multitude of macro forces. I talked about population, talked about, I didn't talk about financial markets, but they're in the background, of course, and mental health we've touched on, but AI and the other technology opportunities as well in our sector. So, look, there's a confluence of forces. I'm very excited to see where we go and, what to expect going forward at WorkCover. Will definitely be change. We can't stand still, and I think it'll be step change. So if I get invited back next year, I'll look forward to telling you about how we've gone year one of our five-year strategy.
Thank you, Garnet, and well done for keeping to time. Okay, we might open up to questions now. I've got a few that have come through on the app, so please keep sending them through or put your hand up if you've got one you'd like to share with the microphone. I'm going to start at the bottom. We've got a question from Ari. And is there anything happening in other jurisdictions or schemes that you would like to emulate or avoid? I'll post that to both of you.
You can choose a positive.
Yes, thanks, Ari. Can always guarantee a question from you, so thank you. Look, I guess I did touch on technology and investing as tools for our people and our systems. There are other schemes who have down that path, and so we're absolutely keen to talk to them and have been about their learnings. It's a tough program to go through a technology transformation, and workers' compensation is a unique style of insurance and requirements for case management. So, that's definitely something we've got our mind on in terms of challenges and learnings from other jurisdictions.
Ari. from our perspective, I think it's probably a similar answer. There's been a lot of reform or talked about reform in the workers' compensation space in other jurisdictions, in particular around things like psychological injuries. And it's something that we're keeping an eye on, that we're monitoring from our perspective to sort of look at what's occurring, what the implications are and what's sort of going forward. Likewise, we connect in with different regulators across the scheme, across all of the schemes, and really to understand what's working and what's not. I know it probably doesn't specifically answer your question, Ari, but we're keeping a close eye.
Okay, thank you. Second question from Andrew Doman, which is, has there been any recent issues with silicosis, black lung, or any other diseases within the scheme? Also, any issues associated with the runoff of COVID years?
You want to start?
I can assist at least with the first part of that. We very much keep a close eye in relation to all of the dust diseases claims that come in to Queensland, and they have been relatively stable across recent years. Yes, we're still getting numbers coming through, but there hasn't been a spike and there hasn't been a growth that is something worth, I suppose, for us talking in relation to Organisationally, we engage through Safe Work Australia in relation to looking at how to avoid us having claims in the first place. So I think that's sort of something that's been a real positive piece of work for us. And from a scheme sort of side of things, I think we've really bedded down after, I suppose, what was called the re-emergence of black lung in Queensland a number of years ago. We've really bedded down, I think, how the scheme responds to dust injury claims. So we've probably had quite a consistent model of responding across the last few years within that. As for COVID, I don't know that it's sort of something that we've, as a scheme, had a significant impact in terms of claim numbers at all. So it's not something that we're tracking more fully. I don't know whether you've got.
But monitoring closely in conjunction with our external actuary, who's Peter.
I was going to say, the one thing about WorkCover Queensland is the runoff of claims is relatively short relative to many other schemes. Being a common law scheme, like the mean term to payment is like between 2 to 3 years as opposed to 5-10. And so COVID's kind of largely worked its way through by now, so it's not really something where that concerns us too much. Okay, last one. I think this one's for you, Garnet. And this is in relation... So this is from Po Jen Tien, and it's a question on the premium rate. And they're just wondering if the current rate is above or below the break-even premium rate, and if it's below, is it increasing at a faster rate due to challenges related to site claims?
Thank you for the question. It's a good question. Just to give you to context, yes, it is the break-even premium is above. It's about 141, so it's worth 134 in terms of our target premium. So so we've got a conscious discount there and managing our surplus capital at this point. What's the behaviour of that? Something I'm focused on is trying to understand the composition of the mental injury and thinking through, you know, we talked about we're a common law scheme, looking end-to-end through all the different sorts of claim outcomes, what the composition of that that break-even rate is, given the rising incidence of mental injury in Queensland. So, look, that's something we're monitoring very, very closely.
Thank you, Garnet. We do have 2 minutes left, so we do have time for one more question. I'll take that as a no, so we might get a two-minute early break. So if you can please join with me to thank Janine and Garnet.